Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in to another episode of Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian, presented by DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app. We're taping UFC early this week. Get it out on a Tuesday. Hopefully that helps you guys find the right line value and get down and absorb all the information. A lot of tweaks, like I said, to the podcast. We're going to be doing UFC earlier in the week. Hopefully that's welcomed with open arms on Tuesdays by all of our loyal listeners. Successful weekend in football, especially college. We did well, thanks to the guys. Congrats to the guys. We'll have another college football podcast tomorrow and then doing the NFL as well on Thursday. How about Mike Tannenbaum? Rocket the Giants and the Jets for basically predicting the upsets of each. And if it weren't for a fluky defense by Greg Williams, he would have nailed that. So well done. Thanks for the insight there, among other things. And great all around. So appreciate it, everyone. Coming up on this pod, Matthew and Lou will break down their favorite plays on this UFC 256 card. We're also going to hear from Brett Okamoto, longtime UFC insider. He and I go way back to our Las Vegas days, and obviously we were both in Las Vegas right now. So Brett's a friend. And for those who wonder, he is as good of a dude as he seems on TV. So really good guy. He and Ari will do that UFC Plus live weigh-in show on Friday mornings, but I'll be able to pick his brain on the main event and co-main event coming up right now. And then, but first we'll check in with Matthew and Lou. But before we get into today's episode, I want to remind everyone of another ESPN podcast, Stanford Steve and the Bear. Stanford Steve Coughlin and Chris the Bear Felica put their unique spin on the world of playing the odds in college football, horse racing, and more. Be sure to download and subscribe to Stanford Steve and the Bear, as well as Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You using the whole fist, Doc?
Yes, had to break out the drop from my old Friday Night Fights days. It's a UFC card coming up this weekend. We got to bring back Matthew and Lou. Thanks, gentlemen, for getting to do this early in the week. I know, Lou, you haven't ironed out all your plays. Same with you, Matthew, but it's good to get this out so at least our listeners can digest the information and pounce when more shops put up some lines. Let's start with the main event. This should be a big one with UFC 256 at the Apex. And Matthew, I'll start with you because you're on the over here with Figueiredo and Moreno, who just fought.
Yeah, look, they both at least fought on the same exact card together here, so they're going to have similar rest. I know it's a quick turnaround for both of them, but neither one of them actually had a very difficult fight. Figueiredo getting the guillotine stoppage early in that fight, and then Moreno, that fight with Royval, got stopped early in the first round due to the separated shoulder by Brandon Royval. So now we get a situation where both these guys fight for the title here, main eventing this pay-per-view card on short notice. And I really like this fight a lot. Look, Figueiredo has been unbelievable. He's won five straight, beat Joseph Benavidez twice, Tim Elliott, Alex Perez. He's looked really good in doing it. Six straight wins by stoppage. But if we look at his one loss here in his entire career, it's to Jussie Formiga. His wrestling was sort of his kryptonite. Now he's going to fight a bigger guy in Brandon Moreno, a younger, stronger, bigger guy whose strength and entire base is wrestling. We didn't get to see if Alex Perez would be able to get that wrestling game going because he got caught in that guillotine choke really early. But I think Moreno will be able to get that wrestling game going here a bit. I'm not sure if he'll be able to stay in it. I wouldn't be surprised to see him start to slow down as the fight wears on and maybe get stopped in round four, or Figueiredo rally to at least win the later rounds. But I do think this one's going to get over the first 2.5 rounds, and that's where the total's at now. So about halfway in this 5-round championship fight, and I'm going to go over 2.5 rounds minus 105.
Lou, do you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, I tend to agree with the over part of it. Moreno is a well-rounded fighter, mostly a striking-based fighter, and he's also a Mexican fighter, and without being overly general – or degrading, Mexican fighters, really, they're extremely tough and often don't get to fighting until they've been rung up once or twice. I love the fact that Figueiredo is in Vegas, and both of these guys were going to have to monitor for the weight cut. because it's a terrible cut for Figueiredo, who, when he steps in the ring to fight, weighs 153. Just imagine that. He weighs in at 125, fights at 153, and it's his power and his size that cause issue. But Brandon Moreno is more than live in this fight. This fight, I believe, is mispriced, and Moreno's path to victory is, in fact, as Matthew states, and that is to get this fight into the third round. Moreno's had a couple of times where he's been into round four and round five. Figueiredo has never been past the third round, and he's always the taller opponent. In his last 10 fights, only one opponent was taller than him, and Moreno happens to be. There's a lot of things going right with Brandon Moreno in this fight.
And we've seen the apex trends continue. The main event on Saturday went five full rounds, even though it looked like it might be an early stoppage in the first. But we got there. So for whatever reasons, these tend to hit the overs. So we'll continue along that path. Let's go to the co-main. And both of you are on the same side. Lou, I'll let you start here. Why do you like the dog here against Ferguson?
Charles Oliveira is really the hottest 155-pound fighter in the organization right now, especially since you consider Gaethje just lost to the champion Nurmagomedov. The key to this fight is the focus of Oliveira. He's had a hard time getting fights. No one wants to fight him. He's very well-rounded. In fact, he'll be very comfortable on the ground here, which is a key aspect to this fight. Ferguson, we have to monitor what he has left after Gaethje, in essence, took his soul. Now, the good thing for Ferguson is he's had some time off. He's a wild, unorthodox fighter who uses his ground leverage and his ground dominance as a tool to his striking, but he's not going to have ground dominance against Oliveira. And for that reason, and for some of the reasons that I believe Ferguson at 36 years old, I think he's on it. When it goes away in the fight game, it goes away real quick. And I think it's gone away for Ferguson. I think Oliveira is in a very fine position here as an underdog.
Now, it's interesting. So this is the matchup between the third and fourth ranked in their weight class. Ferguson was on a 12-fight win streak until the loss to Gaethje, who you mentioned, took his soul away. Why do you call it the soul?
Ferguson overtrains for every fight, and he had been overtraining and looking well in every fight up to Gaethje. He was a perfect matchup for Gaethje. He was tired. He cut weight maybe three times in a six-week period. It was a terrible spot for him, and his own toughness allowed him to stay in the octagon and absorb 5 minutes of profuse punishment from Gaethje. I think Ferguson, there's, you know, the people that say he's washed and shot, I think are jumping the gun, but I'm one of those people, and we'll find out Saturday if he is. I can tell you one thing, he's going to get the best Charles Oliveira he can possibly get, so he better bring his best game.
Yeah, Oliveira on a 7-fight win streak of his own, all stoppages, has a couple stat advantages too, more submission average, higher significant strike accuracy. Matthew, why are you on the dog here?
A lot of what Lou said, I completely agree with. I'm not sure what Ferguson has left. And it's not just the fact that he overtrained for all of those fights, but a lot of those fights were wars. I mean, these weren't blowout wins from the Kevin Lee fight. Kevin Lee was winning that fight until Ferguson caught him in a triangle choke. You know, he's just been in so many of these fights that had turned into wars. The RDA fight, even Lando Vannetta ended up hitting him with some big shots. And I just think Tony Ferguson has reached that the top of the mountain where he's going to get already. And the one thing Lou said that has really been true throughout the history of the UFC is when you lose it, it's just gone. We look at, you know, champions that were amazing, like Henan Barão, and how he lost the fight to TJ Dillashaw was never the same. And Chuck Liddell, the same thing. This, when it goes away, it just goes away. Rashad Evans, we can make a long list of guys that once they didn't have it anymore, they just didn't have it anymore. And Charles Oliveira has been a wrecking machine. This is a guy who killed himself to make 145 pounds for a long time. And, you know, he was bouncing around between lightweight and featherweight and trying to make that 145. I love the team he trains with at the Shootbox down there in Brazil. And his striking has really come along. This is a young man who came into the UFC as a world-renowned Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner, but was really young, was a little bit one-dimensional. Now his striking has finally caught up with his grappling, and he is really on a run at 31 years old. I feel like he's right in his prime, and I love the activity the last couple of years. Seven fights for Charles Oliveira between June 2018 and March 2020. So he's really been active. He's had trouble finding fights now, but suddenly lands himself in the biggest fight of his career. I think he gets it done Saturday.
All right. He holds the record right now in the UFC, the most submissions ever with 14. Let's go from lightweight to middleweight, Kevin Holland and Souza. And Matthew, you're on Holland here.
And this one almost feels like a bargain to me. 41-year-old Jacare Souza. This is a guy who lost two straight, four of his last six. When we talk about, hey, when it goes away, it tends to go away fast. That's been the case here with Jacare Souza, as he just does not look like he is competitive anymore in these bigger fights. And at 41 years old, you have to question what he has left in the tank. In his prime, Jacare Souza was a capable stand-up guy who is one of the best Brazilian jiu-jitsu submission artists that the 205-pound weight class has ever seen. But now he doesn't have that explosiveness to get fights to the ground anymore. So now Jacare Souza, maybe the greatest submission artist that middleweight or light heavyweight has ever seen, has turned into a one-strike-at-a-time aging striker who tends to avoid submissions himself. Kevin Holland, we talked about what we liked about Oliveira with the activity and getting into that rhythm. Kevin Holland has already fought and won four times in 2020. This will be his fifth fight in 2020. A 28-year-old going against a 41-year-old. Kevin Holland is taller at 6'3". Younger, faster, stronger, has a really underrated ground game himself. I think he's going to chew Jacare Souza up on the feet. I'm not sure this one ever hits the ground. And I think 135 for Kevin Holland against a 41-year-old Jacare Souza is a bargain of a price.
Yeah, Holland 28. But here's the thing. He was supposed to fight last week, got pushed back a week because of testing positive. Now, Souza also was delayed in terms of fighting because of COVID-19, but are you concerned at all with the training component and all that, that, you know, there should, that like Holland won't be in his perfect form?
No, I think both guys have had to deal with COVID issues, and that's kind of just the world we live in here. And I just don't know how a 41-year-old Jacare wins this fight, unless for some reason it turns into a crazy scramble that lands on the ground. But what we have seen is Jacare does not have the explosiveness at 41 years old anymore to get these fights to the ground. Kevin Holland, too big, too fast, too young, too long for Jacare. I think he gets it done pretty easy.
Okay, good. Lou, I want to ask you about this Junior Dos Santos fight. I always like JDS and Velasquez. It takes me back to back when they fought in 2012, I believe it was. That was the last fight I covered for ESPN, a UFC fight that I went to in Houston. And so obviously they're not facing each other, but JDS is on the card here with Ghana. It's a huge favorite here for Ghana, minus 430. And I know you like the dogs, Dos Santos. Forgive the pun. Have a puncher's chance here.
I wish I could say yes, Doug, but no. This is the UFC going out of their way to retire Dos Santos without having to cut him, because we know there's a bunch of cuts coming up. Ghana is simply the one promising, shining prospect on his way up. Yeah, there's some others behind him. One of them, a kid named Bozer from Canada that Matthew knows well, Ghana beat. So this is simple. Dos Santos is 36 and he's lost it. And Ghana is on his way up and he will finish Dos Santos.
Okay, so maybe a win inside the distance. By the way, that was the 2013. I was off by a year. But it wasn't Houston, and it was hit so hard that the cage, actually the octagon, came undone. They had to get like maintenance out there to screw with the power drill some of the stuff on one of the poles because it was just damaged on an earlier card. So it was kind of crazy. It's like, well, what happened? What are you doing? The octagon doesn't work. Matthew, any opinion on that fight before we get to the prelims?
I like the under here a little bit, under 1.5 rounds, +115. At the end of the day, if JDS is going to win this fight, he's probably going to have to land a big shot. This is and if he doesn't, he's probably going to get finished pretty quickly. As we've seen with Junior Dos Santos, he's lost 3 straight fights, all by knockout, most of them coming fairly quickly against Curtis Blaydes, Rozenstruik, and Francis Ngannou. But at this point, his chin doesn't hold up. 6 of his 8 losses are now by knockout, but he still has some bang in those hands, and we haven't seen Ghana's chin tested yet. So, look, Dos Santos' path probably leads to an early big punch landing, where Ghana's path, I mean, people forget he's also an undefeated professional Muay Thai fighter as well, Ghana, the Frenchman here, who has to cut weight to make 265 pounds at 6'5". He is an absolute monster. You know, the heavyweights tend to be 1.5 anyway. I was a little bit surprised to see this one juice toward the over. And if I end up with a play on this fight, it'll probably be under 1.5 rounds.
All right. So Ghana doesn't have the resume, obviously, that JDS has. He's ranked 16th as a UFC Contender Series product, but still a heavy favorite. All right. Makes sense given where JDS is on his career. Let's go to the prelims, I should say. First one there is Cub Swanson and Daniel Pineda. And you have a play, Matthew.
Yeah, I'm really surprised that they made Daniel Pineda a favorite. I know he's coming off a win in his last fight over Gilbert Burns. And this was a fight where Gilbert Burns admitted after the fight that he didn't train hard enough and he completely gassed. Had he not gassed, I think he would have been able to finish Daniel Pineda. He almost got a finish on the ground in round one over Pineda. What's interesting about Pineda, if anyone doesn't know the backstory, is this is a guy who has 27 career wins, all of them by finish. He's literally never gone to the judges' scorecard, which is amazing for a guy who fights at 145 pounds with that many wins, 27 wins, that he's never gone to the judges' scorecard once. But he also has 13 losses, and that's because he goes all out so much. He tends to fade himself. He gets caught in submissions a lot himself. And this is a case where, you know, we're talking about a guy who ended up getting busted for steroids in their professional fighters league, had to serve a suspension, came back. He's 35 years old. They fed him to a surging Gilbert Burns, who the UFC really liked. And I think expected Gilbert Burns was a heavy, heavy favorite. I think minus 600 in that fight, and would have won if he didn't gas. Cub Swanson is 37. He's certainly at the end of his career. He's 1-4 in his last 5 fights. But those losses are to Shane Burgos, Renato Moicano, Frankie Edgar, and Brian Ortega, some of the best guys in UFC. And look who he owns wins over: Dustin Poirier, Jeremy Stephens, Charles Oliveira, who's in the co-main on this card. Swanson's beat all of them. Yes, he's no longer at the top of the mountain, but these guys are almost at the same age. You know, people forget Daniel Pineda is a 35-year-old career journeyman and is a favorite in this fight. Give me the plus money with Cub Swanson.
All right, so you're looking at about plus 115 there. Lou, I know you have a big dog that you think it might be worth a flyer here. Chase Hooper, the youngster, the teenage dream or whatever his nickname is. Obviously, he's only 21 years old, just turned 21, frankly. Last time we saw him fight, I believe he was 20. And he's a big favorite, minus $4. But do you think the undercard is worth a flyer?
Yeah, this is probably as much a fade on Hooper as it is a vote for the 34-year-old Barrett. But Hooper is a just wildly talented wrestler, grappler. And I'm not taking anything away from him, but his last fight against a cagey veteran in Alex Caceres kept it on the feet and just cut him to ribbons on the feet. Now, Hooper is undeveloped on the feet. And for that reason, he's suspect. And he's even more suspect as a minus 200 favorite, let alone a favorite larger than that. Barrett's limited in his own right. Barrett will be shorter. He'll be older, and he's given away a little reach. But they're both left-handers. And to me, why I like Barrett is what I saw from him in defeat against his kid Zalal in Barrett's last fight. The kid Zalal is a whirlwind. Barrett showed me a lot. His regional background and the fights he took on the regional level were strong. And though he has a little bit of strike defense susceptibility, Hooper isn't versed in striking to be able to take advantage of Barrett where he's weak. I think Barrett's live at plus 250 or 300, wherever he is.
All right, good stuff. So maybe a fade of one guy and a bet on the other guy, like what you saw in the last fight. And we'll round things out with Matthew. What could be your favorite play deep on the undercard here?
Yeah, Billy Quarantillo here. One of the guys I really like in his last fight against the Alpha Ginger. Really impressive in that fight. And this is not necessarily a fade of Tucker, but just something stylistically I've seen that gave him problems. So Tucker, neither one of these guys are exactly young prospects. Quarantillo, 31 years old, but 15-2. Tucker, 34 years old, but 12-1. Both these guys, really good records. Tucker, the Canadian, is a really strong grappler, tends to get people in compromising positions. Both of his last two UFC wins coming by submission, but he's only 5'7". Really short for the division, really strong. If he gets people down, he can cause a lot of problems for him on the ground. But in his one UFC loss to Rick Glenn against a much taller fighter, I saw him stylistically really struggle against a much taller fighter. Went back and watched a couple of his fights. And Tucker, not surprisingly, like a lot of people, struggled against a guy who's a lot taller and longer than him. That's the case here. Billy Quarantillo, 5'10" to Tucker's 5'7". Quarantillo is going to have huge height and reach advantages. And he's a Gracie Tampa prodigy himself. So his ground game's really good if it does go to the ground. But when they're on the feet, I think Quarantillo is going to give him all kinds of problems. I laid the minus 120 with Billy Quarantillo.
Okay. And it's up to 135, a few places I see it. All right. Good stuff as always, gentlemen. We like it. We're trying something new this week. Like I mentioned earlier, just going a little earlier in the week. Let's see how it pans out. And fellas, I appreciate your willingness to tweak your schedule as well.
Thanks, guys. Best of luck this weekend. Take care.
Thanks for having us on, Doug.
It's not even so much me as it's Ronick. He's good.
Oh, is that right?
Time out to welcome in a friend. And I was doing the math here, and I'm looking at like 15 years, Brett Okamoto. How does that sound? Jeez, we've known each other a while.
Yeah, man, it was just the other day that I saw it was what, the 12-year anniversary of Manny Pacquiao fighting Oscar De La Hoya, and that was the first boxing match I ever covered in my lifetime out here in Vegas, and so it's at least been 12 years, Doug, that I've been out here, and you and I have known each other.
Yeah, I moved to Vegas in 05, so 15, then we overlapped right when you were working at the Las Vegas Sun, right? So 12 years ago, it's great. We've obviously hung out a bunch, not necessarily during these current pandemic times. Lots changed. Married with a kid. Look at you. I'm still the bachelor. But no one listening to hear personal talk here. But let's talk about the main and the co-main. We'll start with the main event. Obviously, the big storyline here, Brett, is the turnaround for both fighters. They were on the same card. And, you know, you look, you're well-sourced. You've covered these guys for a long time. You've talked to these fighters. You've talked to other training camps, all that. What can you share in terms of background on this short turnaround for a title fight, no less?
Yeah, I mean, it's the quickest title. It's the quickest turnaround for a title fight in UFC history by a wide margin. I mean, we're talking about 21 days ago, Davison Figueiredo beat Alex Perez and Brandon Moreno beat Brandon Royval. It was just UFC 255, and now this is only UFC 256. I mean, I think the closest one that comes next to that was 61 days, and this is 21 days. So we're talking about something that really hasn't been done in the history of the sport. But, you know, both those guys won in the first round at UFC 255. Neither one of them took much damage. I mean, when you're talking about – so they're coming in shape. They're coming in confident. When you're looking at a quick turnaround like this, some of the key factors are just cutting the weight again. I mean, that's a short amount of time to cut the amount of weight. And Brandon Moreno, he cuts less than Davison Figueiredo. In fact, Figueiredo started off the year in 2020 by missing weight. So it's just taxing on the body to go through a weight cut of that magnitude twice in less than a month. So that's sort of a factor to keep in mind. I mean, I'm going to be interested to see what Davison looks like on the scale. But then also it's just about there's not going to be like, I mean, there's going to be game planning, of course, but it's also just about going out there and implementing your style, your game plan. I mean, 3 weeks is not enough time to really do a whole lot of specific game planning for an opponent. And I think that probably favors Figueiredo because, you know, he just comes in and he is so, he that's what he does anyway. He doesn't alter his style compared to what his opponent's doing. And I think Moreno, since he's the underdog, he's the guy who has a little bit more to think about. He probably could have benefited from a little bit more time, but I don't see a huge benefit for either one of them in terms of the quick turnaround. But if I did, it would have to be for the weight, it's Moreno. And then for the strategy, it's Figueiredo.
And they're the guys I was speaking to on the pod are expecting a longer fight, maybe a third round, fourth round, fifth round. Do you see it that way?
That's interesting because, I mean, Figueiredo, he ain't been going to the third or fourth round. I mean, Moreno, he's got that Mexican, you know, that what you think of like a Mexican, an old school Mexican boxer, you know, where he just he's hard to finish, man. He's really, really tough. He's in great shape. And if it goes to the third and fourth round, that's going to be super interesting because we haven't seen Figueiredo there really either, because this is a guy who just finishes all his fights early. So I actually picked against Figueiredo and looked terrible doing it a month ago because I thought Alex Perez was perhaps a guy who could push him into later rounds. And I was interested to see how he would look once it went to the later rounds. We'll see, man. I mean, I think Moreno, when you look at his track record, yeah, he's difficult to finish, but the way Figueiredo has looked this year, I mean, I don't know, man. I can't bet against him anymore after what I've seen in 2020.
Yeah, a bettor told me this once. He goes, I got a lot of tickets of great value in my trash can. You know, you do it enough. You do it enough, and it's like, it doesn't matter if they never cash. So you're right. It gets... You see a path to victory, right? That's the fight term for boxing or UFC, whatever. And you're like, yeah, but it was good value. It's like enough. Like, you know how many people have bet against Mayweather all these years and had great value, and all of a sudden those tickets are in their trash again. So I'm with you there. I've tried to beat Figueiredo in the past. Just doesn't work. So if you don't want to pull the trigger and you're not getting huge payout, plus 260 is nice, but it's not like enormous. So I can't fault anyone for passing on the side at least. But the total does interest me. Like you said, Figueiredo's sort of a quick in and out kind of fighter, which has enabled him to fight a month later. So it works out that way. I want to talk about the co-main event as well. Something was said earlier that I want to ask your opinion on it. You know, given that Ferguson trained so hard, he was on a 12 fight win streak before losing to Gaethje, and Lou said that he took his soul. Gaethje took his soul. What do you make of that for Ferguson here, who's also favored in this fight?
Could be. It could be. I think, it's one of those things, man, that we really, unfortunately, we just won't know until fight night. But, you know, leading up into his last fight for Ferguson, which was in May, it was a terrible situation for him. I mean, the fight was getting prolonged. The fight was getting postponed. I mean, he was the guy who came back and got the UFC back on its schedule after taking multiple weeks off because of, you know, all the shutdowns and everything that was going on around that time frame, March, April. And so his camp was elongated. He cut weight twice, which he also has a big weight cut. So I think, you know, in a way, we saw Ferguson potentially at his worst when he fought Gaethje. And Gaethje was, you know, just in a groove, and he looked great in that fight. And he put it on Ferguson in a way that you do wonder, will Ferguson be the same after that fight? I mean, Khabib Nurmagomedov told me that he's like, I don't think Tony will ever be the same after that fight. And I think that's kind of sort of the popular theory right now. I see a lot of people thinking that Charles Oliveira is going to come in and beat Tony Ferguson as an underdog. However, I will say that this fight kind of came up on short notice. You know, Tony Ferguson was not necessarily supposed to fight in December. This fight was kind of made in a span of about 3 weeks. He really wanted to fight before the end of the year. And he did stand up to all the punishment of Justin Gaethje. I mean, to say that his durability is now potentially gone because of the beating that he took in May, you also got to say, like, he was able to stand up to that beating in May. I mean, you can't overlook that fact. So I think Ferguson, I would probably take value on Oliveira as well, but I would be careful just completely overlooking Ferguson here. I mean, he's still the bigger man. He's still very dangerous. He still has knockout power. He just happens to be coming off of the worst performance, arguably, of his career. And you and I both know that you don't get a whole lot of value betting against somebody when they're coming off of that type of situation.
Yeah, I mean, he's a $180 favorite, but you're right. Like, so many variables were against him. That's a good point to just pump the brakes a little bit on wanting to pound Oliveira. Okay, my man, good to catch up on a Monday. It was nice. Fight week, that is. And I know you're going to be part of the UFC Plus like you always are, the live weigh-in show, 9 a.m. on that's Pacific time, noon Eastern. Looking forward to you and Ariel breaking it down like you always do. And thanks for coming on.
Yeah, of course, Doug. Anytime.
At gambling, the deadly sin is to mistake bad play for bad luck.
Okay, that'll do it. Thanks to Brett Okamoto. It's been a while since we've had him here on the podcast. Good to get him back. And then also thanks again to Matthew and Lou, who have great insight and hopefully sharp picks for this upcoming UFC 256. And we'll catch you guys back here tomorrow on Wednesday for the college football and then on Thursday for the NFL breakdown.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.